to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Well, good morning, Columbia CSL. It's another day, isn't it, to share an opportunity to discover and decide what it means to be a spiritual being immersed in a spiritual universe. You know, as we continue with the theme this month, as Reggie shared, Living Everyday Wonder, the inner life, we're in a prime place to explore just what is ours to do as we unfold the expression and experience of self in a way that contributes to a world that works for everyone. At this time, our community is honoring the 25th anniversary of the Season for Nonviolence, Black History Month, and all those who have given of themselves towards creating an equitable and just way for humanity to live, love, and work together. And we who study this and other teachings inviting us onto the path of spiritual living are learning through each other what it is to see with God's eyes, to witness the beauty and joy and harmony that actually exists in nature and in the ordinary moments. We need each other, even those we feel might be in opposition to us, to point us towards the innate capacity within ourselves to cultivate a peaceful mind and heart. This work is ours to do, and there is support all around. You know, we are positioned, if not yet poised, to experience over and over again that there is no other, but rather our own perception reflected as our experience. Learning to relate with others is really essential in the building of a relationship. However, the goal of having a relationship needn't be the reason for one's choosing to relate. Relatedness can be a standalone when in present moment awareness. Here we are brought closer to others, to life, to ourself, feeling at one without expectation of outcome. You know, oneness can feel, oh my gosh, like an intense belonging, can't it? Where we experience the words of the master teacher Jesus when he said, when you make the two one, and when you make the inner as the outer, and the outer as the inner, and the above as the below, and when you make the male and female into a single one, then shall you enter the kingdom. Here we are free to wonder, I would say, and wander, to course correct without resistance from fear or judgment or affirming separation. Isn't this the root of the spiritual journey? To know ourselves as one, to be free to accept ourselves when we experience that sense of otherness? You know, spirituality is about letting go of limited ideas and false habits to allow the immersive communion with life as a whole. There are no opposites. Now, that idea comes from the spiritual principle of oneness, one ultimate and infinite intelligence, back of all life that created out of itself this intelligence to express in multiplicity or infinite diversity, and in this way, it can be understood. Not always boots on the ground. You know, when we're in the muck, can we understand this idea of there are no opposites? For instance, have you not heard or said yourself, you know, when explaining your new love to a friend, I don't know how we came to be. It's beyond me. We're like complete opposites. Well, then how do you hold this idea in the face of the universal law of attraction? Like attracts like. If you want peace, you must first be peace. If you want a loving relationship, then first you must be loving. What you dwell upon, you become. What you resist persists, and so on. So indeed, there does exist the experience of an opposing idea, opposing reactions or actions, opposing preferences of food, lifestyles, genres of movies, political affiliations. But, you know, perhaps these could be held differently, as in perceived as diverse preferences, thoughts, opinions, expressions, rather than opposing entities or energy forces. What if, when in the company of another, or in a state of otherness, when we are feeling reactive, hurt, disgusted, we look to our inner life instead of even trying to find the gift in the moment? That can be quite a stretch. Personally, I've come to believe, through my faith, or practicing my faith in the principle of oneness, within which exists the principle of unity and wholeness, that when I feel discord inside, it is coming from an untrue thought. The thought can be summed up by saying, we are one, even though you express uniquely or differently than me. And when I see myself in this framework, I know that I am looking at an aspect of myself that I have not yet come to terms with, that only I can know the truth about and make whole. I take the focus off of the so-named other and see where I am lacking in self-love, compassion, and or acceptance for my own humanity. Everything stems from the one source, and all is the one source expressed through individual beliefs. So no matter how life is showing up, as the seeming paradox or as opposing expressions, they are truly sacred complements, because the law of attraction in action is matching corresponding energetic levels of vibration, even when the outer looks different. The outer is the visible form of the invisible belief. We must be willing to at least see and come to understand how it is on the inner, so that we can know the changes within us and do our work to come to into an experience of inner harmony and recognition of the truth at the center of all. So I'm going to ask you, just sit with that for a moment. Let's make it even more relative. I'm going to ask you to remember the last experience you had when you felt unheard, riled up, perhaps fearful from being vulnerable, discovered, perhaps distant through the judgment of another. And just take a breath. Go into that beautiful stillness that Amon talked about in the spiritual practice. Can you place yourself in the feeling of that past experience and look at it differently? Not as something or someone coming at you, doing something to you that is in opposition to you, but rather as having a right to their belief, be they different to yours, in a way that empowers you in your right to freedom of expression, rather than demeans you. When we see the world from a place of having decided consciously or subconsciously that we are separate, or that we need to remain on the outside for safety or peace of mind reasons, or that simply we don't fit in, we will continue to see opposition rather than advocate for our right for freedom of thought and speech. We will see with a dualistic lens, them and us, me and you, right and wrong, good and bad, rich and poor, and make our judgments from this way of seeing. You know, spiritual principle states that we never see the world the way it really is, but the way we see ourselves. So what is ours to do? Remember this principle. Remember the principle of oneness, the law of attraction, and everyone's equal right to expression. We've learned, haven't we? And therefore we believe that we must drop misery for happiness. But it's the wrong approach. For everything in life has an organic unity as sacred complements within the one life. For pain and pleasure are not two things. They're not two things, but in a more scientific language, we can merge both words and make them one. Pain, pleasure, life, death, day, night. On the continuum of emotion and the degree of emotion, one feeling is always being temporal, but yet it morphs and provides the foundation or the idea or the context for the very next feeling. When does one stop and another begin? When do I stop and you begin? In the one. You know, we always want to choose one part, but they are inseparable. We want the rose without the thorns, the love but not the hate. It will not happen. We will have to drop both. Then an entirely new world arises. The world of no opposites, the world of and in both, a world that inspires the joy of bliss. The life and death, the death and life, all are happening at the same time. It is only and ever where our minds are pointed that brings us the experience of either or. How can we see and in both? Do you believe that your soul knows more than your ego? Do you believe that God or life or intimate infinite intelligence knows more as you than you believe you do? Then why is it after all our experiences and proof that life knows what it's doing, do we still put expectations on the results we want, rather than putting expectations on a divine orderly universe by means of the law of mind in action unfolding? Why is it that we are attracted to outcomes and then get cranky, depressed, even traumatized in some cases when they differ from our perspective, instead of being attached to our powerful role as co-creators of our reality? Personally, I am very curious and amused at how engaged I am when observing life's contrasts and seeming paradox. It's kind of like, for me, diving into a deep well of richness, of vibrant colors, intense shades, character, history, her story, and their story. You know, all the while present are synchronicities and connections made through our abridged commonalities if we choose the perspective of oneness. While synchronicities and shared commonality bespeaks of bringing us into a state of relatedness, nullifying that sense of lack of understanding and belonging. Now, so much of our perspective is born from industries built around the ideas on what? Self-improvement, religious righteousness, and cultural norms, all pushing us more and more towards grasping and the seeking out of becoming what we feel comfortable with, rather than investigating, engaging with all the other aspects of self and others in life that we don't resonate with. In this, we exist in the expression of our parts, rather than in harmony with our wholeness. I'm sure you've all heard of the practice of restorative justice. It's a system of criminal justice which focuses on the rehabilitation of offenders through reconciliation with victims and the community at large. And in just one of many examples, a woman named Helen Prejean, who was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, She's a Roman Catholic sister and a member of the Congregation of St. Joseph based in New Orleans, and is also a leading American advocate for the abolition of the death penalty through restorative justice. Now, Sister Prejean has founded the group Survive to help families of victims of murder and related crimes. You may remember the movie, one of my favorites, I love Susan Sarandon, called Dead Man Walking. And it's about a nun while comforting a convicted killer on death row through compassion and the rehabilitation of his own soul, empathizes with both the killer and his victim's families at the same time. You know, there are many hard people to be around and hard issues in which it is equally difficult to find reasons not to turn away. But if we could remain open and curious and know that as within, so without, and welcome the opportunity to learn more about who we are truly in our wholeness, we would have greater trust and expectancy, not to mention better sleep and more cooperative digestive systems. You know, when I'm aware of the opportunity for me to return to oneness, and I'm not always aware, right? We're not always. But when I am, these are some of the ideas I wanted to share with you that I use. First of all, I notice what's happening. And I say, is it fact or is it truth? And I usually come to the conclusion that what I'm seeing is fact, but not ultimate truth. The fact is temporary, and it's an effect of what has gone before in mind, my mind. The second thing is I work with what is really happening. So what that means to me is I gain my center and objectivity away from being reactive by bringing my focus back to what I can be and think in this moment. So choice. Right? And the third thing is I accept what is really happening, which means to me, freedom to choose again, because there is no precedent in principle. Principle is alive, infinite in its creativity and its outcome or potential in the present moment now, because there is no time and space. So there's no precedent right now. I am in the full position with the source within me and the capacity to freely choose who and what I will think and be. Gary Simmons, he's a Unity minister and author of, one of his books is The Eye of the Storm, spelt I, not E-Y-E, but I, The Eye of the Storm. And he teaches about embracing conflict as a path to creating peace. And he shares the science of mind point of view. He says that in order to heal, we have to feel and know what has been creating our experiences to date. It can be unpleasant to delve into what's not working. Most of us would rather stay at the surface level of wearing a happy face. But real healing and growth comes from facing the places of dis-ease or lack of ease, so we know what's been operating below the surface, and then identifying the truth that exists. We have to face the valley of the shadow of death in order to reach the true light, and to know that we are always in the light. As the psalmist says, if I ascend into heaven, you are there. And if I descend into Sheol, the land of the dead, behold, you are there also. In order to compassionately understand our own poverty, we must compassionately understand the beliefs that are creating it. We cannot heal another's poverty until we understand and begin to heal our own. And the law will always make it so. When we think with a dualistic mind, we perceive a dualistic world. As we continue our conscious journey of discovering and accepting our innate wholeness, we become witness to our acceptance of all the unwanted, often intolerable pieces of our life's puzzle. We see that law and order are the way of a harmonious universe, and that each piece in our lives showed up at the right and perfect time for our next choice and our next demonstration on freedom's path. You know, coming to a thing closely, accepting, embracing, and moving through it is freedom's way. Standing back, depersonalizing, becoming a sacred witness, knowing you are not your thoughts, but the thinker behind your thoughts. The allowance of this too shall pass through this and in both experience of objectivity in being a sacred witness and subjectivity in the facing of an acceptance of situation. This experience of opposition becoming a source of discomfort or denial blossoms into our expanding or expansion of mind, and therefore our expansion of heart, compassion, and embracement of the divine sacred wholeness and harmony of the one life. It is said that if we do not define our moments, they will define us. I don't know if you've heard that, but you know, question is, what is it that defines us then? Holmes says, we are looking with, and we are looking at. May that define us. I love this story. Wayne Dyer tells it, and it's called Keys in the Dark. And it's nighttime, and he's in his house, and he turns out the light, and he immediately drops the keys that he was holding in his hand. So, of course, you know, the search ensues, and he can't find them. But then he looks out the window and he notices a street lamp shining outside on the street. So he goes out there to look for his keys. Now, during this kerfuffle, a neighbor walks up and says, "Hey, what'd you lose?" To which he replies, "My keys." And the neighbor says, "Well, where did you last see them?" And he says, "In my house." So the neighbor says, "Well, why are you looking out here then?" And he says, "Because I can't see them in the dark." We look outside to solve our problems wherever the next brightest idea may take us, when we know all along that it is within the dark that whatever we have lost, even when we can't see the truth, is meant to be found. Holmes says, go out in your world and deny any discordant fact and deny its reality, not its appearance, but its reality. Do not let the condition of discord in your life, whether it manifests in your physical health, your emotional relationships, be the ultimate truth in your life. Do not let the belief in this discord by the world influence what you know to be a greater truth automatically operating through you. You know, and I know that we are very skilled at talking ourselves into anything, making anything look like it supports our belief according to how we see ourselves. So then let's talk ourselves into declaring and claiming and being grateful for the life we presently have, knowing that it is the perfect life of God. Yes. Dr. Holmes says in his book, This Thing Called You, he says, this thing that stands between you and the greater good is a thing of thought and nothing else. It is not what you deem as reality that you must change, but your mental reaction to it. What is called the subjective state of your thought, the accumulative patterns, is automatically attracting or repelling. These patterns are automatically re-sowing their own seeds in the creative medium of mind. And they will keep on doing this until what? You change them. They will do this without volition of your intellect. So your hope lies in the fact that you can change these patterns, perhaps not in a moment or a day or a month or a year, but you can change them. This is not a process of merely making affirmations or holding thoughts. It is a process of the gradual re-education of your whole mental reaction. It is a process of following the intuition back to the pattern, of feeling toward it, of accepting it, and of acting as though it were there. Thomas More says to be spiritual is to be taken over by a mysterious divine compulsion to manifest some aspect of life's deepest forces. We become most who we are when we allow the spirit to dismember us, unsettling our plans and understandings, remaking us from our very foundations. Nothing is more challenging, nothing less sentimental, than the invitation of spirit to become who we are and not who we think we are. An increasing ability to give up what we know and give up the need to understand awakening our mystical nature is needed to perceive oneness. A mystic is one who intuitively perceives the truth and without mental process arrives at a spiritual realization. We are all mystical in part. We can sense the atmosphere of God, that truth that lies deep within every experience, be it love or great anguish. Toward the end of his life, you know, that beautiful sacred man and one of Dr. Holmes' teachers, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who I believe was unequaled for the beauty and aptness and originality of his expression, he lost the capacity for language. His biographers tell the story of his going to Longfellow's funeral in Cambridge. Looking around, he asked, "Where are we? What is the house? And who is the sleeper?" Emptiness came upon him in the form of an appropriate malady that gradually ended his career and prepared him for death. With grace and good humor, he moved steadily from the light into the shadows. In his notebooks, he had written, "All things have an accompaniment of magic. If the fact seem plain and thoroughly known to thee, 'tis plain thou knowest nothing about it." Court the thinker behind the thought. Become a sacred witness to your life as you dive into the belly of the experience, see, acknowledge, and hold sacred diversity. And in that sense, the presence, the ultimate divine reality, the truth of all life, oneness. Behold, the kingdom of God is at hand. May we be the vessel of love. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.